challenges yesterday where we took a break and people didn't come back. And
some people came back, the others have already left.
Oh my God, on a plane.
No, because then I ended up with Honorable Motau in the meeting, and it was only the two of us in Parliament. So that my plea is that if the chairperson makes a suggestion that members do not agree with, raise your hands and say no, this is not reasonable. It's unreasonable, rather than just not turning back. But people were not here yesterday, are still not here now, so this discussion is not serving any purpose. I feel that I'm like,
I wasn't here, but I'm here now.
I'm talking to myself. No, but it is to yourself that if I make a suggestion that is senseless, you need to call me to order rather than vote with your feet. I can see him. There's nothing wrong with my eyesight. Thank you very much. Our party caucus is cancelled. Let's check if you are Honorable Motau. What are your arrangements with your caucus?
Yes, Chair, we're still on, so I would have to leave early.
And tomorrow's meeting, there are many apologies. So as a result, I felt it's going to be a waste of time to drag people here, the very few who will be around. But at the same time, if we cancel tomorrow's meeting, we'll be giving the legal team a chance to go through all the, to get legal opinions, to prepare for the meeting on Tuesday, so that when we meet on Tuesday, I think we'll be moving faster, because then we'll be all the search and information and all that will be done. So I think it will help us to move faster. Giving them a day off and giving ourselves a day off too will do both of us good. But it's not actually impacting well on our program. And, and we have booked these venues so that other people cannot get them. But now it's already late, so we have denied other members of parliament these venues to use them. But anyway, I think we should continue in the Mghalib and see where we have stopped. And then, then what happens after, when you leave? If Khanar is here, you'll be one person from the opposition, so we can continue. I don't think we can continue as the two of us as ANC changing laws when other people are not here. But would I leave? Members have asked to be excused from the meeting because they are on a program of their party. So
thank you, Chair. On that cheerful note, there's
No. If he's here, then no, we'll continue until. Yeah. Thank you. Khalib.
Thank you, Chair. We are at 39, at page 19. 39. 39 is one of those small, big amendments. Small in the sense that the first part only amend the time frame. It's not amending the time frame. It's enabling parties to increase the time. In terms of the present legislation now, conciliation must take 60 days on operational requirement. Facilitation must take 60 days. And the proposal is that any party can propose extension of that, and the other party should not aggressively refuse that extension. There are two concerns in this amendment. Is that one, Labour, because they want to save jobs, they want to make sure that they give conciliation as much possible time of succeeding as they can. That's the first thing. Therefore, they of the view that if you only stick to 60 days and say, well, if there's no agreement in 60 days, even if you think that you are closer, you might need another 2 days, and you might have an agreement in 2 days' time. The law, as it is, says 60 days, and after 60 days, you either go on strike or you retrench. And now it says that parties should be amicable to an extension when approached. That's what it says. Now, for business concern on the issue is business says that they don't want to prolong the negotiations for retrenchment, because the longer you take, if the organization is struggling, you might be causing more damage. Those are the two different views between business and labor on this view. Labor says, labor is coming from the premise that it's got to be made a little, because if you look on during the recession started in 2008, the global recession, South Africa lost the most in terms of number of workers that we lost. It's not dismissal, it's through retrenchment. More workers were lost through retrenchment during that period. And for labor, they say, we've got to make it a little bit difficult for employers to retrench, for the issue of retrenchment. There was even a debate that said, should we make it more difficult to retrench, easier to dismiss on misconduct and misconduct and capacity, those issues. There was that also, but it did not fly, that kind of a debate. Yeah, but for business, as I said, it's about balancing the time, because if you prolong the time for negotiation, you might cause more damage than you thought you would if the company had retrenched earlier. I mean, both arguments make sense. Both the issue is why we're balancing in that. That's why we're not increasing the 60 days. We're just making it possible for parties to propose an increase on that. I'll pause just on that one.
Thank you, Chair. May I just ask, doesn't the current legislation, and sorry, my copy is still opening here, allow for an extension of time? Because, you know, it seems to me this is one of those clauses which says you must obey the law when everybody actually knows you must obey the law. And if the existing legislation already allows for extension of time, surely we expect of all people at all time to act reasonable. And why must it be necessary for us to say to people, you may not unreasonably, you know? So it just seems to me like belt and braces, isn't it?
The issue here is that we have to strike a balance in terms of exactly the issue, proposal, or the extend the time, or make it possible, state the obvious, basically, as you say, because the law as it stands now does not restrict parties in agreeing to extend time. They can, even the law as it is, extend the time, as you say, if both parties agree. The only thing that it's saying here now is trying to make it difficult for the other party not to agree by saying you cannot unreasonably refuse. And that is a compromise in the extension of the actual time that was reached in the negotiation, because something had to give in this debate of the time to save the company and the time to save jobs, and that was the compromise that we strike on it, and it's a balancing act that we strike. Correct, the present law does not prevent parties agreeing to extend if both of them agree to extend, except that parties are not always reasonable. Reasonableness, yes, is there, but when the shoe is tight on your side, you know that. But we don't think this is a big issue, because unreasonableness will be tested through those processes and all of that. I mean, that's the issue in terms of that. If I can go to the other area in terms of just to link them both. The second issue one is a big one, in the sense that it amends the law. If you look at the law now, current law, Section 19, 189, subsection 19, it defines presently what is a fair reason for dismissal. That's 189A. It defines what is a fair reason for dismissal for operational requirements. It talks to employer economic. But then Section 189, which also deals with operational dismissals, doesn't have such a definition. There the court decides what is fair in 189. In 189A, it tells the court and says these are the grounds for dismissal on operational requirement. And the intention here is to make 189 and 189A the same, and let the court determine whether the dismissal was fair or not, without confining the court to specific parameters. That's the intention. There's differences also on that, because the jury's out whether if that definition is not there, would the company succeed? Is technological advancement a valid reason for retrenchment? I mean, a company changes technology, productivity goes sky high, they make more money because they change their technology. Is that a reason for retrenchment? In terms of Section 198, 90 now, it is a reason. It does say that the company can retrench because it has innovated. And when you link up with retrenchment with companies struggling, because the notion when you talk about retrenchment, everybody assumes that you've got to retrench because you're struggling as an organization. But when you innovate and change technology, that means you're struggling as an organization. You could make more money, in fact, because you've changed. Is that a good enough reason to retrench? And that, we want that to be argued in court, and let the court set up the jurisprudence around that, instead of the law saying yes, it is. In some cases it might be, in some cases it might not be, that we don't know, and that's the issue. Business was not happy with that proposal. They did not agree with that proposal precisely because it is taking away those, and now they've got to go and argue their case in court, and the other party argue their case in court. That's the essence of that proposal. Therefore, it's not a big proposal, but it's a big one. Those that I call small, big amendments that could change the playing field around that area. I'll pause there if there are any questions around this.
I know of an instance in Belgium, in a chicken farm, where about 20 something people were working there. Now I think they are reduced to about 4. Because all the places where they have these chickens are now automated. The feeders, everything is done by computer. So the person only comes once a month to refill. And it's not even the people who deliver food go in a truck and they put a pipe on top and fill the tanks and go. So, and people who were working there got retrenched. So we don't need to anymore. They are now staying at home. Is that fair? Fair to who? To the chicken coop owner. For him, all right, it's making a lot of money. Life is easier. He doesn't have to deal with the stress of paying salaries and talking to so many people and dealing with industrial relations. He's working with machines. But for those workers, it means there's no food for their children, no pocket money for them when they go to school. Is that fair? There is a room.
Chair, while one feels for those people, the fact is that, for example, you've now referred to the chicken industry. We are importing chicken meat at prices far below what we can produce here in South Africa. And that is the kind of dilemma that we are in. We can force people to maintain higher costs because I'm convinced that the person has made his calculations and he is now producing eggs and meat at a far lower price than what he did before. And the problem that we've seen, for example, in our textile industry is that due to aging technology, many of our textile factories close down and those people are eventually all sitting at home. Whereas in this case, perhaps, you know, two-thirds of the workforce may be sitting at home. So it is always a difficult thing, and I think the one thing that we must keep on reminding ourselves is we can only grow jobs in this country if we are competitive in terms of international costs, be it labor costs, capital costs, etc. So while one would like people to only go for labor-intensive industries, unfortunately, we need to still compete internationally, especially when we're producing goods, etc. So it is a very difficult thing. But I personally can agree to the removal of 19, because again, what we want to avoid in the Act is where people adapt their habits to the Act. And I've seen that. I've seen that really where people, for example, reorganizing of a business has now become just a buzz thing. And I know of some municipalities who have reorganized themselves over the last few years just because they actually want to get rid of staff. And that's an abuse then of legislation. So if Mr. Mkalipi says, listen, people can still retreat, but technology is not an automatic excuse, because we know technology is changing all the time. And just don't throw technology at us just to have something to fill in on the retrenchment form. Rather go and argue the case, and then we can do that. So I know it will not go down well with business, but we are here to try and take away those clauses that have proven to be lead to abusive practices.
Welcome the ANC lawyer.
Consultants make more money than lawyers.
Your labor broker lets you go.
No, our lawyers arrived. Yeah, and Mkalipi.
Clause 40 is just clarifying the date of dismissal where you've received a notice. It's, there's no controversy about this one. All parties agree with the clarification so that there's no confusion in when is the date of dismissal in cases where you got a notice and you get a dismissal. If there's any clarification in this, we'll take that on that one. Oh, 41, do I? As members would know that in terms of the law now,
what are we saying about this 40?
No, I've explained 40 is just a clarification of when is a dismissal in a case where you receive a notice of dismissal.
Yeah.
And clarify when does the dismissal actually take? Does it take place on the date of the notice? Can it take place before the date of the notice if you've got all what is due to you? I mean, that's what it's clarifying. It's a technical amendment that clarifies that. Yeah.
But then, you know, there's a ritual that I do. Just checking with the boss if it's in order. So that if they say yes, then it will be fair. Because somebody may say that Honorable Nyagema.
Thank you, sir. Whilst Ms. Mkhalipi is saying is in order, and my lieutenant is also saying that, so the just clarify me, the date of dismissal is the date in which the notice expires, or if it's earlier, the date in which the employee is paid all outstanding salary. Now, in a band where the notice expires today, but you have not paid all your money, that's the technicality that I'm looking at, Chair. He can shake his head. This is some of the things that do happen. For whatever reason, then you are told, yeah, fine, your notice is passed today. But then, because of other reasons, we could not pay you all your monies on the date of the expiry of the notice. So, for me, I think we need to make sure that we have covered correctly the earlier date. I don't have a problem with that. But I think if then the monies are paid after the expiry date of the notice, then I think now Khalifi will say what he wanted to say when he was to say. Thank you, sir.
Another thing I want to check is that I'm dismissed today, and then I get paid after 3 months. What's going to happen to these 3 months where I wasn't working and I wasn't paid? Am I going to get interest for that 3 months period? Those are some of the things that are ringing in my mind.
Mr. Chair, it shows that your MP has never been dismissed. MPs don't get dismissed. No, I'm joking. what this is trying to do, Chair, I think we need to start today. What does this amendment trying to? What is the mischief that we're trying to deal with? You've got a situation here where a worker is dismissed through a notice. Gets a notice. Remember, the BCA says you got to get a notice. And then the employer gives this worker a notice that says a month's notice. This is now the 1st of November today. The employer has given a written notice that says your last day in this company is the end of November. That's a calendar month. First day, you get a notice yesterday that says you start tomorrow working your notice. Your notice will end at the end of November. You're still working. Now, what this says, remember, the employee can, let us say this dismissal is unfair for as far as the employee is concerned. Now, when the employee goes to the department, to the CCMA, this is the issue that we're trying to deal with. The employee goes to the CCMA. The employer says, no, you're not dismissed. And all the CCMA asks, when were you dismissed? Now, this act says, you dismissed on the date that is in your notice, that's the first thing. The notice says end November, you dismiss on that date. Therefore, you can say to the system, I'm dismissed on the end of November, because the notice is not more than a month. There's no notice that's more than a month. Let us assume then that the company says, we owe you 100,000 for leave pay, for the money that you've worked for all the money that you owe. The company pay you your money on the 25th, not at the end. Your notice says on the 25th. The company pays you everything that you owe them. Then you could go to the CCMA and say, on the 25th, because the sooner you go to the CCMA, the better for you as an employee to solve the case. You can go to the CCMA and say, I was dismissed on the 25th because I've received all my money due to me in terms of the notice. That's what this is there to care for. You cannot get a notice. Normal notices are not more than a month of dismissal, a month in terms of the PCA. This is the issue that it's not talking about a misconduct dismissal, because there's no notice in a misconduct dismissal. It's not talking about an incapacity dismissal or retrenchment dismissal. Retrenchment, yes, there's a notice because you've negotiated. That's what this is trying to solve. We're trying to make certain that when do workers go to the CCMA and say, in the case that their contract is ended, to a notice. And then you want to challenge that case. So that if there's a question in the CCMA that says, when was the dismissal? When were you dismissed? Then they'll be able to say, we're dismissed because I received my last salary. That was everything that was due to me on the 26th. They could say, if the employer is going to pay a week later after the month of the end of November, the date of dismissal is that November that is in the notice. This is what it's trying to clarify. And it's trying to make it easy so that there are no technicalities. The system may, even for inspectors, if they want to check things about the date of dismissal, and it's making sure that that date of dismissal, it says it is a notice date, or if it's an earlier date, if you want to say it's an earlier date, it would be the date on which you get paid what was due to you. Then that will be the earlier date. Otherwise, it's a date of the notice.
Thank you. You can move on, Imperi.
Now, 41. 41 is doing two things. It's allowing parties, conciliation must take 30 days at the CCMA. After 30 days, you go to arbitration. But then this amendment is allowing parties to extend the 30 days by agreement. If they agree to extend it, if they believe that it's a possibility of settlement, it's just allowing them to extend it. That's the first thing that it does. The second thing is giving the CCMA the authority to arbitrate on dispute of operational requirement, dispute on retrenchment. Presently, the CCMA can't arbitrate on these cases. These cases must go to the labor court. Now, in terms of the proposal that we're making, we're opening up for small employers, for the CCMA, those employers that employ less than 10. Small employers, the CCMA can arbitrate in single arbitration. And we're clarifying also the issue of single arbitration that must go to CCMA, because the court its interpretation of that took away that benefit when they're interpreting it, clarifying that that's in the law already, the issue of a single employee that is being arbitrated. Now we're introducing the 10. If you employ less than 10 employees, and you're a small business, the CCMA should be able to arbitrate. Those are the two amendments, three amendments that we're making under 40. It relates to Section 189, that one. The first one relates to normal conciliation, where parties can extend by agreement the 30 days. It's in line with the 60 days in retrenchment that we put a proposal that it cannot be unreasonably refused. That's
Sure. In an event where I have referred a dispute and the date of consolation is after the 30 days from the day when I referred the dispute. Isn't it that the law says, if I refer the dispute today, so then this dispute must be conciliated within 30 days, counting from the date of the referral. Never mind the 30 days that I have to refer the dispute after my dismissal, but I've already referred the dispute. Now there's that 30 days. In an event where CCMA, the date that is located for the conciliation is after 30 days, but CCMA gives me the notice of conciliation within these 30 days, but the conciliation day will be after 30 days. What do you call that?
That's what the court said. therefore, in terms of the court interpretation of 30 days, it doesn't matter what other reason. If conciliation doesn't take place within 30 days, we issue a certificate. Whether it's because the applicant did not arrive,
Chair, I'm really so sorry. We have a caucus at 10 o'clock and our party attendance of caucus is a compulsory thing unless you've got a death certificate and apparently they only accept one of those in a lifetime. So will you please excuse me, and I'm really sorry because I wish I could ask for permission on that side because we've got a wonderful opportunity to continue now. But I'm afraid
decisions would be taken in your absence for
Vice
President or Corporate. You need to correct. I don't get redeployed. Members of the resolution.
I'm sorry, Chair. I'm being interrupted here.
Yeah.
Do something.
Members of the Progressive Forces, do you want to say anything?
No. I want to say something.
Yes, I want to say something. The B on clause 44.
Mm,
41. I mean 41. I'm rushing 44. The 10 employees. If a company employs 10, why 10? What informed? Because you are classifying this as a small employer. Even if there will be amendments, I never look at the employment equity amendments. Of companies that employs 50 or less than 50 in terms of the reporting, and that is also a measurement that has been in fact trying to say this is a small employer. Why then?
This area is a very also tricky, controversial area, the numbers. The first thing is that Gen is based on the linkage with the small business determination. Remember, the minister has got a sector determination published called Small Business Sector Determination. That sector determination exempts small business on some provision, especially around the overtime of the BCA. It exempts small business from that. And that sector determination regards small business as an employer that employs 10 and less. Now, that's the basis of this proposal. Now, in the, the DTI also has got the issue about small business. I think they regard small business, as you say, as 50 and less. Employment equity regards small business 50 and less. We tried to, that was our intention, to also amend the sector determination to go 50 and less, and amend this to go 50 and less. Because this situation, labor is happy to amend this to 50 and less, business is not. Labor is not happy to amend sector determination to 50 and less, business is happy. Now, this, we are a government of the people. We serve both labor and business. And we've got to strike a balance between the need to protect jobs and the need to create jobs and for business to be able to run their companies. And that's the dilemma. And I repeat this issue that in the sector determination, labor is not happy to, you know, to increase the 10 and less to 50. And we left it because labor was not happy. In this proposal, labor is happy, business is not happy. Now, if we are going to, as we intended to, have one determining definition of a small business between DTI, Department of Labor, LRA, sector determination, employment equity, then we would, for the department, we wanted to go that route to have all 50 and less. And as I said, we did not succeed because of the competing interests of the different parties around this area. How was that?
No, you changed your mind.
Yes,
Honorable Nyakemba.
Yes, I didn't change my mind.
Okay.
You don't know what your mind is.
Mr. President, I think this is uncalled for, unparliamentary. What is that?
He'll have to walk.
You see, thank you, sir. I'm looking at the department whether they are consistent. I know we'll be going to clause 44. We're still at 41 now, but we'll go to clause 44. And the explanation that we'll get from the department is that apart from other reasons, the employers, in fact business, in Nedbank wanted 12 months, and then labor wanted zero, and then the department wait and look at other processes, your probation and everything else. Then they said, no, we must be in the middle. In the middle from nothing and 12, then the middle is 6. Now, I'm looking here. There's no middle. But I think the thanks for the explanation, because this question led you to give more explanation. What were the tensions that are in the mind of the department, and then what social partners said in Nedbank? Because what becomes clear when you look at sectoral determination, where currently you are sitting at 10, if an employer employs 10, there's an exemption, some of the provisions of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Now, the discussions at Nedbank, business wanted a situation where you increase 10 to 50 because there will be exemption. And then labor said no. And then labor here wanted you to be in line with what DTI says and the employment equity in terms of reporting. Then business said no. So I understand. Thank you very much. That doesn't mean that we agree.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think for what is worth, it might be useful just to throw in one dimension of the document we have before us. And it's something that we don't often talk about, but it's absolutely critical for us to bear in mind as we consider these proposals. It is possible that as you go through these amendments, you might find areas that are so scary. You would begin to doubt whether the people that were considering these propositions at NetLag were thinking at all. It is possible whether they were thinking at all. And that is a function of, it's the nature of the beast. In NetLag, as people engage on these issues, they are areas where they do trade-offs. So they deal with this thing as a package. So you may find that in one chapter, there's something that says to you, you might end up concluding that certain South Africa is very progressive to have agreed to this. But if you look at that in isolation to what could have been a possible trade-off later in the bill, then you might say they are progressive. Until you come across an area where business said, well, you're not getting this. So there is a real potential that if you look at just one area in isolation to the total package and stick to it, it has a potential of unraveling the entire deal, so to speak. I'm just throwing that so that we can appreciate that there will be areas in the bill where it demonstrates that as a country we're moving forward. But there will be areas in the bill where it says, well, we seem to be moving backwards. Now, what happened? And if we don't take into account that it could be a quid pro quo for a concession that was made earlier in the package or later in the package, we might feel extremely uncomfortable. I'm not throwing it in as an area where it invites response, but I'm just saying this is one of the approach that is taken in dealing with some of these things. So there is always that potential that what we do in fine-tuning some of the areas has this real potential of unraveling the entire deal.
Thanks, Mr.
Mkise.
I'll hand over to the
real
chair. The real
discussed, but there are no other than declarations.
Let's move on.
I think the other thing he said that I've got to stress here is that whatever we do in this bill, whatever Parliament do, we've got to make sure that there's a buy-in of all stakeholders at NetLag and ensure that we do not unravel NetLag. I'm not saying that don't change, because we don't want a situation where the bills are changed drastically so that business would say, what are the point of the negotiations in the deal that we strike at NetLag in the bill, and that destroys NetLag and building it. That's the only thing I'm saying. Make changes and make sure that you also, in the changes that you make, you build up NetLag. And that's the issue that...
Yeah.
Thanks, Chip. I think the department must realize that not all of the clauses, there was an agreement in NetLag, as they're fully aware. So they can't try to mislead this committee by attempting to tell us that there was agreement in the clauses. And I think that both of the points that were made by the department just now about that we must consider if there was some agreement between business and labor on some of the clauses, but they're not going to tell us which ones there were. I think it's irrelevant, because we've come to, if there was an agreement between on NEDLAC on this legislation, there wouldn't be a problem. We'd have a meeting for 10 minutes and we'd all agree and then we'd go. We wouldn't be sitting here for 2 weeks discussing it. So I think that the department's a bit out of order by saying that now at this late stage. Thank you.
Misleading is too strong a word. let's look for a better word. We should consult to a lawyer.
The last time we debated this, we were asked to deal with 42 with the ethical employment as a package, not by clause. Therefore, we'll take the same approach. 42, this is what we said the last time. Your 43, sorry, 42 just ahead of. Yeah, 42 is just the heading. 43, the principle that is in 43 is not new. This is what in the act as we speak. The principle of joint and several liability. 43 strengthen that principle. That's what 43 is doing. It's strengthening joint and several.
Gamba, please be patient. Your time will come.
and if you've got a copy of the act, you go to section 198. You will see that section 198 deals with temporal employment services. And this section, that's what this section is doing. And it's unpacking. The only difference with section 198, if you look at section 1984, the present section 1984 now, it indicates what are the contraventions that hold joint and several liable. It says if a labor broker breach a collective agreement concluded in a bargaining council, if it breaches an arbitration award that regulates terms and conditions of employment, not an award of dismissal, a basic condition of employment, and a determination made in terms of the BCA, it says the Wage Act, in terms of the BCA. Those are the only areas, exclude dismissals, exclude all sorts of issues. Now, 43 is extending the ambit. That's what it's doing. It says, it doesn't have to matter, this list, even after dismissal is included now, in this. And it goes further, it clarifies that the employee or the inspector can cite either the temporal employment agency or the client or both in that choice. That's what 43 is doing, basically. And this part, there's no disagreement at NEDLAC on that part. But remember, this is a package. On 43, there's no disagreement, really. And I'll pause there to give an opportunity to Honorable members to agree with us.
Honourable members, there are these are challenges of politics of representing others. Becomes a real challenge when it comes to this, where you are sent to represent people and you are not here to defend or try to, you know, to argue them, to argue their points. But are there comments from the members here on this? Honourable Nyagemba, you are on your own.
I've got my colleagues. they're of the view that we don't comment. But that doesn't mean that we agree.
Yeah.
If we don't comment. Because the time where we'll be going to section by section and then vote is still coming. But it's important in order the department to know what will be the attitude when that time comes. That's important. So I think the all this and what the department have just explained in a referral form, when one referred dispute, is written an employer, the name of the employer, the details of the employer. I know the answer would be that, no, if then this amendment goes through, that form will be redesigned. But I think Mr. Mkalipi was confident making reference to Section 198, subsection 4 of the current Act. But if you look currently in the referral form, it has not been redesigned in order to accommodate Section 198, subsection 4. I know his answer would be that, of something that has not even been done with the current labor legislation. For me, it's whether you cite both the client and the temporary employment service. There is a, they call it a service agreement that is signed by that client and the temporary employment service. Now you go to arbitration, you cite both of them. And that arbitration award doesn't nullify the service agreement that has been entered between the client and the temporary employment service. Because in those service agreements, there's always a clause. And even in the employment contract that is signed by the worker who has been placed by a temporary employment service, there's always a clause that says, as long as the client require your services, we're placing you there as long as the client require your services. I want the department to comment on this one, because the arbitration awards, if the client treated me in a way that constitutes a dismissal, I refer the dispute and cite all of them. And citing them will go to arbitration, assuming that the client, yesterday we spoke about Point de Liminaire, we spoke about that, but from experience, what clients always do, clients make it a point that they don't tell the temporary service employee that you are dismissed. What they normally do is that they talk to the temporary service and say, you change this one. And as an employee, obviously you know what are the reasons that led for you, even if the temporary service doesn't tell you that. And you know how you were treated by the client and what led for you to be treated in that way. So I'm saying, whether we can try to glorify it, paint, color, give a colorful paint and everything else, that doesn't protect the employee who has been placed. This section 198, it doesn't. As long as there is that service agreement, as long as even in the employment contract, it's not in the letterhead of the client, it's in the letterhead of the temporary employment service. It's only a reference that you are placed. You're not employed. You are placed. But as long as the client still requires services, that's the point that I'm coming from. And I think it's important also to look at arbitration awards. What has been the threat? Because a commissioner, is very difficult for a commissioner to say you are reinstated by a client, because the temporary employment service doesn't have an establishment. That establishment belongs to the client. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I think when we engage, I agree we are making changes. Then the voting is something else, you know. So, yeah, Khalid. Or is there another hand?
The proposal that we're putting on the table, it's doing three things. It's dealing with the problem of workers who presently you've got a situation that's and the courts have also even solved this problem. You have before even the court, before this amendment, you had a situation where employees employed by labor brokers, they get dismissed. Go to the CCMA, the labor broker agrees to reinstate and say, well, we'll reinstate. And that reinstatement is putting that employee on the list, not in a job, on the list. There's a court case dealing with this issue, and the amendments here deals with that. That's the first thing. Putting a person on the list is not employment. You can't do it. Secondly, it doesn't matter, right? The first thing is this. In terms of this amendment, I'm trying to check if your employer, as you say, Honorable Ngemba, that your contract between the client and the labor broker says, as long as I get the contract, as long as I've got the contract between the two of them, you've got a job. If the contract ends, you don't have a job. Now, it doesn't matter whether that contract says. If that contract is contrary to the law or any employment law, let us assume that happens. I've got the contract with Mkhize. The contract says I'm employed as long as Mkhize has got a contract with you. And then you end the contract with Mkhize. Mkhize dismissed the contract. Dismissed me on the basis that that contract says that. Let us read 198A4 of this amendment. 198A4. It says, the termination by a temporary employment services of an employee's assignment where I'm assigned, assignment with a client, the termination of an employee's service of assignment with a client. Now you are terminating, let's link it to what you are saying. You are terminating my work on the basis that your contract has ended. For the purpose of avoiding operation of Section 3B is a dismissal. 3B, which is a deeming provision. Yeah. Now, what I'm trying to say is that if that incident happens, this labor broker says that the contract between him and the client is terminated. Therefore, I don't have a job. The section says that's a dismissal. There's no question about it. It says, remember we're talking about here, vulnerable workers. And we put that section there in order to deal precisely with that. That a termination of a contract between a client and a labor broker is not a dismissal for me. I can, in that case, cite any of the two parties by taking up a case. And that's what these amendments are trying to do. Therefore, the issue raised by Honorable Ngemba, yes, it's a genuine issue. There are many workers that have suffered in the hands of labor brokers on the basis that they've been, the client and the labor broker contract has ended, therefore that ends your contract automatically. Or when they go to the CCMA, they say, no, we have not dismissed him, but we're not giving him a job. We're putting him on the list. He's not earning a salary. And then we think the amendment, when we look at them, or the package, as Mkhize was said, that if you look at one area, that answer must be given in another area. That's why when you were speaking, I kept on looking at the legislation. And I keep on looking to make sure that because I know that we've had this debate at NEDLAC. And the parties at NEDLAC made sure that we need to put in protection against abuse on this issue.
Thank you, Chair. We are trying to protect vulnerable workers in all costs. Now, I don't want us to go back and say what is a vulnerable worker. That's the first thing. If you look at the definitions, in the Occupational Health and Safety Act, I noticed one before you, the definition of an employer. Labor broker is not an employer. In those definitions, are you finished? Okay. The explanation.
If you could consult softly, because I think you are disturbing his.
Thinking.
You know,
it takes
a long
time.
As a bush lawyer, I want everybody to listen.
You don't need a blade of grass in your eyes, it's lost in the forest.
Yeah, sir. The first issue is the citation in a referral. When you cite, who becomes the respondent? Because you are an applicant, the one who is referring a dispute. Now, maybe it's English. Three B of 198A, not performing temporary services for the client, is deemed to be the employee of that client, and the client is deemed to be the employer. I never argued that. That's not what I'm arguing.
Just a little bit. There's going to be some disturbance. They're going to close this so that the other people can use the other section of the hall. So, yeah, continue.
Okay.
If it's disturbing you, we can break for some time until they're through. I'm more noisy.
Now, the department is linking section 3 with, subsection 3 and with subsection 4 of the amendments, where the termination by the temporary employment service. Remember, this subsection 4 is referring to an event where the temporary employment services employee is not performing.
Let's take a 5 minute break. I think this is going to interfere with the system recording.
Okay, so thank you, sir.
Because our consultation here was disturbing him.
No,
no.
No, I'm listening to the chair. This is the chair. The chair. I want the chair first. Thank you.